Today's shir in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Moed Katan Daf Yud Ches. We're learning today Le'ilu Nishmas Li Schreiber. I do not have his Hebrew name. And we're also learning Le'ilu Nishmas Harav Rafal Gidal Yohu Zev Ben Harav Yaakov Tuvia. All the Nishamas we learn for should have an Aliyah from all learning. We begin the Gemara on Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, two lines on the top, with the words Pinchas Achu de Mar Shmuel. So we have a story here. Pinchas, who was the brother of Mar Shmuel, Isra be Milsa. Isra be Milsa is a term that the Gemara uses whenever somebody suffers a loss, one of the Zayin Krovim that they were obligated to sit Shiva for passes away. So Nebuch, Pinchas, who's the brother of Shmuel, lost his son. That's what Rashi Ksiviyad says. Avelus be Pinchas, Achud Shmuel, Shemez Beno. His son died. So Shmuel goes and pays a Shiva call. All Shmuel, Lemishal Taima Mine. This Lashon of Lemishal Taima Mine, Rashi explains, Ledaber alibo de Pinchas, to go and console him, to speak to the heart of Pinchas. Chazinu, when he's there, Shmuel sees Letufre, that the nails of his brother Pinchas are very long, the Havu Nefishim. And he told him, you can cut your nails in the Avelus, even in the week of the Shiva. Amalei, Amai lo shakalt lehu, why don't you cut your nails? They don't look so good, and you're allowed to go cut them. So Amalei, Pinchas said to Shmuel, Ibedidei Hava, if this had happened to you, that you were Rachmana Litzlan in Avelus, Mimizalzlus Bey Kulei Hai, would you treat this din so leniently? Would you be so quick to go and cut your nails if this Avelus had happened to you? Now, this was an innocent statement. However, we have the famous statement from Koheles that this is like a shgaga that left a ruling, that left the king. So therefore, Havai kishgaga shiotze nefnei hashalit, his remark saying, if you were an Avelus, it's Tiftach Pel Lesotim, so to say, and it was therefore, that's unfortunately what happened, Visra Be Milsa Bishmuel, and then Shmuel, Nebuch, had an Avelus, he lost one of the Zion Krovim, and Pinchas now went to go visit him. All Pinchas, Achul, Mishal, Taim, Amine, and Pinchas went to go and visit his brother at the Shiva call to console him. So, Shaklinu Letufre, Shmuel at that point took his nails, and Chaptinu Liape, he cut his nails and he threw them at his brother. In other words, he was angry at him that you, so to say, by saying this, if I be an Avelus, where I treat this so lightly, so that caused in Shemayim somehow a kitrug against me, and now Nebuch, I'm an Avelus. So Amalei, he told his brother Pinchas, Shmuel said to Pinchas, less long, don't you agree with the rule, bris krusul asvasayim, that when you say something with your mouth, it could possibly come true. Again, not chas v'sholom, the Pinchas had cursed him, not chas v'sholom, the Pinchas had really done something, but when this was mentioned, it was verbalized, so in Shemayim, they look at everything, and sometimes the normal protections that would normally have been there to protect Shmuel are removed. Or for whatever the reason, the din is now focused on Shmuel, and something happened. We don't understand how this works, but we do have this concept of bris krusul asvasayim, and therefore, Nebuch, this occurred. And a person should always be very careful. We have the famous ruling, Al Tiftach Pel Lesotim. People should be very careful with it. Say, you don't want to give any sort of an opening, Chas V'Shalom, to in Shemayim. They should look at you. You never want to be on the focus of Shemayim, and therefore don't say something. This is the whole idea how a quote in Ayin Hara works. Again, we don't understand how these things actually work, but there are certain rules and general practices that we try to adhere to prevent these things from occurring. Now, where do we see that this idea of bris krusul asvasayim? So the Omer of Yochanan, this is based upon what Yochanan said, minayin she bris krusul asvasayim. Where do we see that al tiftach pel lesotim, that you shouldn't say certain things because by the verbalization of some things, they can actually come true? Shenamar. So this is the famous pasuk with Avram Avinu when he takes Yitzchak to do Akedis Yitzchak. So he leaves behind both Eliezer and Yishmael, and he tells them, by Yomer, Avram El Narav, he tells Eliezer and Yishmael, Shuluchem Po Machamor, you stay here with the donkeys. We're going to go up to the Harabayis area, the Nishtachaveh, and we'll go and bow down to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'nashuv alechem, and both of us will return. Now, Avraham Avinu at this point in time did not think that Yitzchak was returning. Nevertheless, he said this, and therefore, Bistayo Milsa, and it turned out to be the Hodu Tarbayu. This, in fact, was what happened. So this was bris krusul asvasayim. By the fact that Avraham Avinu said it, so to say, that's what caused it to occur. Now, what do we see from here? That Shmuel did cut his nails, both during his own Shiva, and he told his brother Pinchas, why don't you cut the nails during the Shiva? Sovri Mineh, you can see from this story, the Yad in the regular. It seems that he only cut the hand nails because he said to him, the Havu Nefishim, that they look too long, implying that nobody sees your feet nails, your toenails, and therefore that would not be allowed to be cut during the Shiva or on Chol HaMoed. However, Amar Rav Anan Bar Techlifa, Rav Anan Bar Techlifa says, no, Lididim, Mefarshali Minei Dishmuel, I myself asked this to Shmuel and was told by Shmuel, Lo Shna Diyad, Velo Shna Diregel. No, this din applies that you're allowed to go cut your fingernails as well as your toenails. However, Amar Rav Chiya Bar Rashi, Amar Rav, Rav Chiya Bar Rashi qualified this and said over the name of Rav, Ubi Genustura Osir. However, you're not allowed to use a specialized implement. Rashi says Genustura is a misparayim, a scissors. So you can cut them with your fingers, you can cut them with your mouth, you can bite them, you could use some sort of a non-regular misparayim, something other than a scissors, that you can't do. But with a shinoi, you'd be allowed to go and do this. Similarly, Amar Rav Shimon Bar Abba, Rav Shimon Bar Abba said, "Hava kaimna, I was one standing, kamed Rav Yochanan bei midrasha. I was in front of Rav Yochanan in the base medrash, and it was chol moed, b'chol shemoed. And what happened? I saw that Rav Yochanan bit his nails and threw them away. V'shachlinu l'tufrei b'shinei, he bit his nails, v'zrakinu, and he threw them onto the floor of the base medrash. So he said, I could learn out three things from here. Shema minot tlos. The three things that Rav Shimon Bar Abba said he learned from Rav Yochanan were as follows. Number one, Shema minot, mutar li tol tzpar na'ayim, b'chol shemoed. You're allowed to go and cut your nails on chol moed, albeit with a shinui. Ushma minot, ein b'hem mishum mios. And number two, you see that it is not disgusting to go and bite your nails. Even though in modern, polite company today, it's not necessarily looked upon as the most pleasant thing to watch somebody bite their nails, but he says it's not considered the davar mius that you must refrain from doing in public. That was number two. Number three, Yishmami, number three, mutar lezarken. You're allowed to go and just throw your nails away. You don't have to go, as we'll see, burn them or to at least bury them. The more questions is slash shmamino. Ini, is this really so? But Tanya, we learn in a brisa that there are three things that people do with nails. Two of them are much more praiseworthy. The third one is actually something that's terrible. Shlosh adorim nebu b'tzi pernayim. There were three things that were said about nails. Hakovrin, if somebody buries them, he's considered a tzaddik. But somebody who's sarfun, that's even a higher level, he's a chassid. A chassid is higher than a tzaddik. And the reason why burning them is better than burying them, because the mafarshim point out that if, in fact, you bury them, it could become uncovered, and then the potential problems with having a pregnant woman step on those nails could occur. We'll see in a moment what we're talking about. So the two good things are either to bury them, you're a tzaddik, that's a good thing. Sarfun, to go burn them is even better. Again, the minhag today for many people is to throw them in the toilet and flush them away, and that's considered the most appropriate way to go get rid of your nails. But zarkun, to just drop them where they are, to throw them in a public place, Rasha, that's in fact a terrible thing. Why? Why are you called a Rasha? Time of my, what's the reasoning? Because Shema Tavor Alein Isha Ubra, because maybe a pregnant woman is going to come and step on them or pass over them, Vesapil, and that could lead Chas V'Shalom to a miscarriage. Now, why is that so? So the Eitz Yosef has a beautiful idea. He brings down, and originally, before the sin with the Nachash, if you're meeting from the Eitz Hadas with Chaba and Adam, so our skin wasn't the skin that we have today. Our skin was all like fingernails. It was all a chitinous material, a hard material, which was a very protective skin. You know, you don't break your fingernails so easily, whereas you can easily go and cut your skin or get bruises on your skin. So therefore, originally, before the sin of the Eitz Hadas, we had this very good protective measure. And then, with the sin of the Eitz Hadas, part of the punishment was that the skin occurred instead of this nail-like material, and we're just left with a little bit by our fingernails. That's one of the reasons why we look with Dafka to Havdalah, to look at the differentiation between the nail and the flesh, to remind us of this original sin that we did by eating from the Eitz Hadas. So in any event, that's what the Eitz Yosef says. That's why the Dafka over here, it could cause a pregnant woman to miscarry, because this is a reminder of eating from the Eitz Hadas. In any event, that's why it's dangerous. So how could Rav Yochanan do this? That's the question. Gemara says, no, Isha behemid rasha lo shlicha. Where did he throw? He threw in the base medrash. Women didn't go to the base medrash in those days, and therefore there was no problem. This was a, quote, a good way of getting rid of the nails. It would be the equivalent of burying them. Now the Gemara says, v'chitema zimnim demekanshi luhu v'shadu labroi. He says, wait a second, but maybe they'll then eventually sweep the floor of the base medrash, and they'll gather in all the nails and all the other garbage, and they'll throw it outside, and then a pregnant woman could step on it outside. How come he's not concerned about that? Gemara explains, no, kivon dishtani, once you've changed the place with the nails, so they were deposited by Rav Yochanan over here in the base medrash, and then they're going to get swept up and thrown outside. Once it's changed, kivon dishtani, then ishtani, then it's no longer a concern. It doesn't have the ability in a different location to go and cause this problem. Okay, Gemara continues and says, Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, Zug bo mechamason lifnei Rebbe. Chamason was the name of a place. And Rabbi Yehuda Marav says that a pair of Talmidei Chachamim once came before Rebbe to ask him a shaila. Alternatively, by Zutra, he learned this is not a statement of Rabbi Yehuda Marav, but he said, Masli, this was an actual Feirish of Braisa. The Zug bo, a pair of Talmidei Chachamim came, mechamason, the name of a place, lifnei Rebbe, and they asked him the following shaila. Ubikshu mimenu tzipar nayim. Whether it was Rabbi Yehuda Marav or the Braisa, this pair of Talmidei Chachamim asked Rebbe the following shaila. Are you allowed to go cut your nails? Some say this is talking about Avelu, some say it's talking about Chol HaMoed, or both. V'hitalemin, Rebbe said it's permissible to go and do this. And the Braisa, or Rav Yehuda Marav, said, V'im bikshu mimenu sofa, if they'd asked, are we also allowed to trim our mustache? Hitalem, Rebbe would have permitted to them. Or an alternative version was, or Shmuel Amar, that he actually asked that. This Zug of Talmidei Chachamim asked Rebbe, can we trim our mustache? Ach bikshu mimenu sofa, v'hitalem, and Rebbe said, yes, during Chol HaMoed, or Avelus, or both, that you would be allowed to go trim your mustache. However, Amar Avital Safra, Avital the Safra, Avital who was a scribe, said over Mishmei, now the Gisut, we have this Rav Papa, but it says in the source of Shas, it should just be in the name of Rav. Avital the Safra said over in the name of Rav that when we said that you're allowed to go and trim your mustache, he said, Safra, Mizavis, Lazavis, from one corner of the mouth to the other corner of the mouth, you can trim the entire area of the mustache in the lower part of the lip area above the mouth. Furthermore, Amar Avami, he said, Ubisof HaMakevis, this is only if the mustache is so long that it's bothering you to eat. If it's bothering you to eat, then you're allowed to go and cut it on Chol HaMoed or in Avelus time. And furthermore, Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, he qualified it even further and said, Lididi, I myself, Ubisof HaMakevis, Domili. For me, any area of the mustache is going to interfere with my eating. And therefore, he felt that it was okay to go and cut the entire mustache area on Chol HaMoed or in the Avelus period of time. I would point out one additional thing. Tosfos points out in Nida, why is the person who burns the nails considered a chassid and is greater than the person who just buries them was a tzaddik only? So Tosfos points out because the act of burning the nails is a potential risky thing for a person. Somehow, again, on a supernatural level, the burning of the nails is potentially risky. Yet this person is willing to go put himself at risk in order to make sure that guaranteed that no pregnant woman will ever step on this. That's why he's called a chassid. And as opposed to if you just bury them where there's no risk, you're a tzaddik, it's very good, but you're not a chassid. Okay, Gemara continues and tells us another memra in the name of this Avital Safra. He's not frequently mentioned in Shas. So the Omer Avital Safra, Mishmei, again, the Rav Pop is the gear, so the we have, but it should be Mishmei the Rav. So this Avital Safra said two more things. The first one is Paro Shoya Bime Moshe, the Paro from Paro Melech Mitzrayim in the Yetzias Mitzrayim story. Paro was a generic name. It's like president. It's like a Tsar or Caesar. It's not specifically a individual, but of course we're familiar with the Paro Melech Mitzrayim of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So that Paro, Shoy Bimei Moshe, the Paro who was the Paro of the time when Moshe took us out of Mitzrayim, he tells us some very strange physical characteristics about that Paro. Hu Amma, he was only one Amma tall. An Amma is between 18 and 24 inches. So he was obviously an extremely short person. And Uzikono Amma, his beard was also one Amma long. So these, the Mepharshim explain, his physical characteristics were very small. And his Zikono, which represents who he really is also very, very small. And Uparmashtako Amma Vizeris. And his Parmashtako, that's a reference to his Aver, his Gid, was 1.5 times as long. Vizeris is a half of an Amma. And his desires, his taivas, were much greater than his body and his capabilities really were. In any event, that's the way that we can try to understand the drasha behind telling us these physical characteristics of the Paro, which may or may not have been physically accurate. In any event, the reason behind this is L'kai Mash Nemer, this is to teach us the idea, Ushvala Noshim Yikimale, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes allow even the lowest of people to become a leadership role. So Paro was a very base person, that's the physical characteristics that we're explaining over here in a hashkafic point of view. So Paro was a very base person, he's a very lowly person, physically and figuratively. And at the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed him to become Paro Melech Mitzrayim. So that was the second statement we have in the name of Avital Safra. A third statement, Vamra Avital Safra, Mishmei the Rav, Papa, again, is the gear. So we have Mishmei the Rav, Paro Shoy Bimei Moshe, this same Paro that we're talking about in the days of Moshe, Yetzias Mitzrayim, Amgushi Hoya. Amgushi is a word that in the Ksiv Rad Rashis, he reminds us we had elsewhere, could mean one of two things. Either that he was and this is a machlokes in Nida. Ksiv Yad Rashi tells us there's one opinion. Mandu Amr Amgushi means gedufi shemagadif es Hashem. He was a blasphemer. Lekach yotzei hamaymo shemishtabeach atzmo v'amar yor li v'ani asisani shemachz gatzmo keloka. And he was making himself into a god, saying, I created the Yarden, and therefore I don't have to go to the bathroom. And therefore, when he did have to go to the bathroom, he went into the water, and therefore nobody would realize that he was going to the bathroom, and he went to the bathroom in the water. That's one opinion, that he was a blasphemer. Amgushi means a blasphemer. And Mandi Omar, Harshi is Mechashit. The other opinion says that he was a magician, black magic. The Yotzi Amayim, Alasus Kishuf, and he went down into the waters to go and do his Kishuf. In any event, this Pyro, in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, was an Amgushi. How do we know that? Shenemar, Hine Yotzi Hamayim, Vagomer. As I said, these two explanations why he went down specifically to the water. Okay, those are the three statements that we have in the name of this unusual Amora, Avitu Safra, Mishum Dira. Okay, then we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Eilu Mechasa B'moed, we said that there's certain people allowed to do laundry, as well as we said cut their hair, on Chol HaMoed. And for example, we said somebody who comes in from an overseas trip, and therefore he had no opportunity to go, somebody was in jail, somebody was in captivity, etc., they had no opportunity to go and do their laundry before Yontif, so they were allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed. Rav Asi tells him, Rav Yochanan, Mi she'ein lo elo choluk echad. If somebody only has one garment, so he too is mutar l'chabsa b'chol shemayit. Now we had this the other day, and here's where we see it inside. So a person who only has one garment is allowed to go and do it on Chol HaMoed. Obviously, even if he laundered it before Yontif, it's going to get dirty, and therefore he's allowed to go do it on Chol HaMoed. That is what Rav Asi Amar Yochanan said, but Masa Rav Yirmiyah, Rav Yirmiyah says, wait a second, our Mishnah didn't mention that. Why didn't our Mishnah mention that? Because it's not true. Elu b'chabsa b'moed, habam midin seyam b'chule, our Mishnah did not list this characterization of a person with only one garment. So hani in, only those that are listed in the Mishnah can go take a laundry, do the laundry, or take a haircut on Chol HaMoed. However, Misha Ein Lo Ela Choluk Echad wasn't mentioned in the Mishnah, therefore lo, is not allowed to go and do the laundry on Chol HaMoed. So Kasha, on you, Rav Asi, Rav Yochanan, how can you go into the Mishnah? So they would answer, Amalei, Rav Yaakov, Rav Yirmiyah. So Rav Yaakov responded to Rav Yirmiyah when he asked this question, and Rav Yaakov said, Asmer Loch, I will explain it to you. Mas Nisan, what our Mishnah said, our Mishnah was talking about that these people had two garments and both of them were dirty, so they were allowed to go do it on Chol HaMoed. But it doesn't in any way rule out the fact that if a person only has one garment, like we just brought down from Rav Asi on Rav Yochanan, that Mishen Lo Elo Cholik Echad, someone only has one garment, Mutu L'chabso B'Chol HaShemoed, he would be allowed to also do his laundry on Chol HaMoed. Gemara continues and says, Shalach Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yaakov Bar Giurei Mishmeder Rav Yochanan. Rav Yitzchak Bar Yaakov Bar Giurei said over the name of Yochanan the following halacha. Klei pishton, linen clothing, mutar l'chabsan b'chol shemoyd. You're allowed to go and launder them, take them and clean them on Chol HaMoed. Even though we said that you're normally not allowed to clean clothing on Chol HaMoed, linen clothing are different. Why are linen clothing different? So Rashi in the Ksiv Yad at the bottom tells us, Mizdayim Tvei, they get dirty much faster, the less lay Bei Nami Tircha. And number two, there isn't so much Tircha involved in cleaning them, so they get dirty faster, and even if you prepared all of them before Yontif, they're still going to get dirty on Yontif, because they get dirty so much easily, they require laundering so much more, and it's also not such a big Tircha to go and clean them compared to other types of material. And therefore, the Kol Hanach Da'asrino Mimas Nisan Big Deit Semer, and therefore the ones that we said were also in the Mishnah, we're dealing with woolen garments, not these linen garments. That is the din that said over the name of Yochanan. Moses Rava questions this, and Rava says, Mitpachos Hayadayim, we learned in our Mishnah that only Mitpachos Hayadayim, those hand towels that get dirty very frequently, so even if you did them all before Yontif, they're still going to be dirty on Chol HaMoed because you go through them, and Mitpachos, and we turn to Yudches Omer Beis Hasaporim, which we had a number of different definitions for what those were. Either that was the type of cloth that they put over you when you got a haircut, or they were the mantles of the svarim, or they were some sort of a material that you put on top of the writing so it shouldn't get rubbed out. Those were allowed to be washed on Chol HaMoed, implying honey in only those, yes, but klei pishta lo seems to say that klei pishta not only automatically have a heter to go and wash them on Chol HaMoed. So only Abaye says, no, Masnisin is even talking about afilu d'sharmine, those materials such as tzemer, you'd be allowed to go and wash them if they were the saporim or they were the mitpachos, the hand towels. So those would be allowed to use even if they were kli tzemer. But certainly kli pishto would be allowed to be laundered on Chol HaMoed no matter what. Mor is not ready to accept that teretz and says, Amar Behedja. Behedja tells us, Lididi, I myself personally saw chazili. I saw myself at the Tiverian Sea, the Kinneret, Yamashal Tveria, that people would go and take the Matgile, they would go and take Mishle. Rashi tells us Mishle means safolim, bowls, the money, kisna, of linen garments, b'chola, the muada. And they would do this on Cholamoid. In other words, they would go and launder them in the Yamakineres on Cholamoid. So you see that you are allowed, in fact, to go and do this. And this is a riot, what we said over the name of Yochanan, that you're allowed to go and wash clay pishton on Cholamoid. So Gemara says, Lavdavka, Masiv Labaya. Abai questions this, and he says, Man lemelon de Ritzoch HaChom Mavdei, Dumash Lomirat HaChom Mavdei. Who said that all these people that went out, that Barhead just saw going and doing the laundry in the Yam Kineret, were doing this with the permission of the rabbis? In fact, maybe the rabbis were not happy about this. So you can't bring me a riot from there. We don't know for certain that that was under heter, under acceptable rabbinical supervision. And in fact, they may have done something wrong, so you can't bring me a riot from there. So we don't have a proof to that statement that Rabbi Yochanan made that you're allowed to use clay pishdon to launder them on Chol HaMoed. Now we go to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us, Ve'elu kosvin b'moed. The following things are allowed to be written on Chol HaMoed. Normally, and Allah do malacha Chol HaMoed, except for a dover ha'ovud or other specific exemptions to the normal rule that Chol HaMoed, either midaraisa, we had brought down, or possibly only midarabanan, but you're not allowed to do the malachos on Chol HaMoed unless you have a heter to do so. One of the most famous heterim we mentioned many times is Dover Ovid. And Rashi in the Ksiviyad tells us that all of these that we're going to go through right now are basically some sort of a loss that a person would have, that therefore you're allowed to go write these things on Chol HaMoed. We'll see as we go through the Mishnah what I'm talking about. I would suggest keeping a hand on Rashi. Rashi's in the Ksiv Yad can be found three lines above the wider lines of the Rashi in the Gemara that I have. And it tells us that the Mishnah says, Kiddushei Noshim. You're allowed to go write down Kiddushei Noshim. What does that mean? Documents that involve with Kiddushin for a woman. So Rashi tells us, we're going to go through a lot of these Ksiv Yad Rashi, so keep your hand on the place. Kigon, Hare At Mekudeshesli. If a person writes a shtar to go and get married. So, Umiskacho Bishtar. Adisha Niknes Bishtar. One of the ways that you can marry a woman, Bekesiv Shtar Ubiya. So one of the ways that you can marry a woman is by giving her a shtar, saying, with this document, you are my halachic wife. And therefore, a person is allowed, Siviyad Rashi say, Yochol Lichto, you'd be allowed to write this down. Why? Kigon Shemisiyare, Shema Yiknechena Acher. That maybe somebody else is going to go and marry her before you. And therefore, she won't be able to become your wife. And therefore, the Havali Dover Elva. This is no bigger or greater loss that a person could have than not marrying the woman that he wishes to marry. And Vechen Kulam, Rashi says, all the other things that we're going to be allowing you to write down in this mishnah, all of them mishum dover her oved, and therefore mutar. Every one of them involves a significant loss. It doesn't only mean a financial loss, it can mean something that's even more important. Not being able to marry the one you want to marry is much greater than $1 million loss. So therefore, this is permitted to write this on Chol HaMoed. So Kiddushin Noshim would be the shtar of Kiddushin, that with this shtar, hurry up mikudeshesli. Likewise, the gittin. You're allowed to write a shtar gittin. What was the situation? So Rashi continues in Ksirad. She wrote, said, this person wants, Zeh Lotzeis Bishayar. He's going out in a caravan. Meno Kosiv Akshav. He doesn't write this get to his wife now. Hare Havaname Kifrach Matja Ha'aveh. Shari Choshev Zuaguna. He's concerned that he's not going to return, so he wants to write his wife a get, just like David HaMelech, who the soldiers used to write a get before they go out to battle. In case Rachmon Lutzan, they didn't return, and the wives would be left without knowing what happened to their husbands. So therefore, this person's going out on a dangerous business trip. He's about to go on the caravan. And it's Chol HaMoed. He doesn't write her this shtar of Gittin, so then it's possible if he doesn't return, she'll be left in Agun, and he doesn't want this to happen to his wife. So therefore, you're allowed to write this as also Dover Ovid. The next thing in the Mishnah is the Shovrin. What are Shovrin? So Rashi tells us, Shema Yomar Halove Lo Epara Loch Ho the Ein Li Shover V'Yelich L'Darko V'Yasidzeh. The person says, I'm not going to go and repay you now because I want you to give me a receipt. And if you don't let him write the receipt, he's not going to repay him. And therefore, he may never get repaid, and therefore, you're allowed to write this down as well. The next one is a daitiki. What is a daitiki? So Rashi tells us over here, this is a matona shchimi, right? A person on his deathbed wants to give over something. So we say, this dvarma kiksuvim umisurim domi. However, you want to write it down, and that's what the word daitiki means, da tehe lemekam vilios. So you want to be able to prove that this happened, so you'd be allowed to write down this deathbed wish of the person that you should get money or that something should be done. Then the next one is matana. You'll have to give a matana. Again, this is a classical example of a dover ovid. As Rashi says, matana is bari. This is a healthy person who wants to give you a matana. Now, if you don't write it down, the loksivle mafsid hamakabel the shem yachzor zehanosin. He may retract. So if you don't write it down right now, he's going to say, listen, I changed my mind. But if you write it down now, then it's done. And therefore, he can change his mind. So therefore, this is a dover ovid. Next one is Pruzbulin. This is a halacha that we're all going to learn towards the end of this year, at the end of the Shemitah year. So people write a document that their mesora, they're handing over. Rashi says this all in the Ksibyat as well. Shalot Hishamit Shvius, V'yafsit. So normally in the Shemitah year, at the end of the Shemitah year, according to most, there's an opinion that says we should have done this last year, but that's not the way we paskin. So we paskin that you have to write it at the end of the Shemitah year, that you're basically handing over all of your documents to the Beis Din, and therefore they're still allowed to be collected, because otherwise the default position is that you can't go collect the document after the Shemitah year. Bashvius Tishmitenu and Atashta. So all of these documents would not be collectible. But if you gave them over to the Beis Din, the Beis Din is allowed to collect them. So that's what the Pruzbul is. The Pruzbul is a mnemonic for standing over here. It says Pruz Buli Ubuti, which means it's a takana for the aniyim and for the ashir. The aniyim, it benefits them because people are going to be willing to lend the money in the end of the Shemitah year. Who's going to want to lend money if a month from now they won't be able to collect it? So it's good for the aniyim that people are willing to lend the money, and it's good for the ashir that they're going to be able to go collect on this money that they're giving out. They'll be able to go collect it after the Shemitah year, and therefore it is allowed to be done to the benefit of the aniyim and the ashir. It would be a davar of it otherwise, and therefore it's allowed to be written on Chol HaMoed. The next thing in the Mishnah you're allowed to write is Igoros Shum. We have a couple of different definitions of what this is. Rashi the Ksivya says, Shomu based in Nichse Love. Based in evaluates the person who borrowed the money, his property, so this way it can be used as collateral, and they give it over to the Malveh, so if he doesn't pay his debt back, so this goes over to the one who lent the money. Alternatively, this is Shum HaYisomim. This is an evaluation of the property of Yisomim that normally is not allowed to be sold unless it's evaluated properly to make sure that the Yisomim are protected. Mishnah continues, and the next item in the Mishnah is Igoros Mazon. What is that? So Rashi Ksivya tells us, Shekiba Lov Lozun Bas Ishto. So a person has a second marriage, the woman has been previously married, and she has a child from the first marriage, and this person says, okay, I will marry you, and I will also support your child. So they write a document for this, and if he didn't write this document, he could then retract on it, so therefore be a davar ovid, and you're allowed to go and write this down. Then we have Shtari Chalitza Umeyunim. These are documents of chalitza mi'in. Chalitza is, of course, if a woman, unfortunately, her husband dies and they don't have children, so then her husband's oldest brother, or if it's not the oldest brother, but lechatchila should be the oldest brother, they have to do the mitzvah of yibam. If they don't do the mitzvah of yibam, they do chalitza. So you would write this down as well in order to document that this chalitza took place. So the woman would now be muteres l'shuk. She should go marry somebody else in the open public, as opposed to that she's connected still to her former brother-in-law. And similarly with Miyun. Miyun, Rashi reminds us, in Sibyad, is a girl who was married off by her mother or by her older brothers. Kitana, Shalohi Vioshte Saros, she's still below the age of puberty and had a Dirabonin marriage. If her father was to marry off, that's a Daraisa marriage, Rashi Sibyad reminds us, and that can't be undone with Miyun. But Miyun basically says, up to a certain point in life, usually before she reaches the age of maturity, there's a machlokas as to when that exact age is, in any event. So until she reaches that age, she just walks away from the marriage. She can say, I don't want to live with this guy anymore. And she doesn't need a get, but we have to have a formal miyun, and they would document this so the woman wouldn't be considered. Everybody remembers the wedding, but nobody's going to know that she got a get. So they're going to question, how is this woman not a married woman? So we write a document for miyun to demonstrate that this woman is no longer connected at all to that first husband, which was only a dinder abonin. And therefore, the shtar miyun can be written, because it would be a great, tremendous davar ovid for this woman if she was still considered to be married to her first husband when she really wasn't. So that's allowed to be written as well, shtari chalitza miyun. And the Mishnah concludes and says a couple more, ushtari beirurin. What are shtari beirurin? So Rashi reminds us over here in the Ksiv Yad, shtar sheborin len Beis Din, that Beis Din goes and assigns the third member of the Beis Din with a formulation that's known as Zeh Baru Lo Echad, and they both together pick the third one. That's called Zabla. This is actually brought down into American law. Zabla has become an American legal term as well, Zabla, I believe, and it is a legal term that says when they're trying to form a Beis Din or a secular court of law, so they're arguing who should be the members of the court. So each side picks one, and then the two judges that are chosen, they together pick a third one that's acceptable to both. So they have to write this down, Kadesh Eliyasru. Everybody can prove that, hey, no, we all agree that these three would adjudicate our case. And therefore, that is a Shtar Beirurin, and that is allowed to be written down as well, so that you don't have any doubts afterwards that this was accepted by all parties. And then you have Gezeros Beis Din. What is this? So Rashi Ksivya tells us Psak Din. This is the Psak Din of the Beis Din. So they write it down on Chol HaMoed, Kivin the Hashta, Hu the Shchichei basin, because we have to be concerned that maybe it will be forgotten what the psak was. Alternatively, Rashi brings down Lishnachrina, Gzeru Shagorjan Olov, the Kabel Esedin. These are that everybody accepted the din, so they would document this and write it down so there can't be any argumentation about it afterwards. And finally, the last thing that Mishnah mentions is Vigoru Shel Roshus. What does this mean? So Rashi says, Tzivoya Sultan. A shulton, that these are the commandments that the government put out, the sultan or the shulton. And alternatively, lishnachrina, igoros shel shalom. These are just friendly letters that a person writes to his neighbor. Tosu says the same thing over here in the Ramasal Igoros. We should see on the Yoshami that this is prisa shalom. This is a friendly letter that you send to your friend. Others say, no, it's a tzivu of the shulton, like we find in Pirkei Avos, altis vada lirashus. Rashus is the government. That concludes the mission. Now we start the Gemara. Gemara says, Amar Shmuel. Shmuel tells us, Mutu la'ari sishu v'chol shemoyed. Person is allowed to go get the first stage of marriage, the halachic stage of marriage called erisin or kiddushin. A person is allowed to do this on chol shemoyed, even though we normally have a rule that the samachta b'chagecha v'lo ishtecha, you have to get a simcha on chol shemoyed. We talked about this a lot previously in the previous mesechtas, that you're not allowed to get married on chol shemoyed because the din is that you have to have simcha with chol hamoed and not the simcha of getting married, being with your wife. So therefore, you might have thought that you can't even do erisin on chol hamoed, which is not such a great simcha because you're not together with your wife yet until you conclude the second stage of marriage, the nisuin. Nevertheless, you might have thought that this is not allowed. So Shmuel tells us that it's permissible to do erisin on chol hamoed, shemo yikad benu acha, because of the concern that somebody else may beat you to it and offer kiddushin to this woman, and she'll accept it because she didn't think you were going to do it, and therefore you lose the woman that you want to be your wife. And the Gemara says, Lema Masayile, our Mishnah seems to be in support of this statement of Shmuel. Why? Because our Mishnah said, we gave a whole list of things that you're allowed to write in Chol Hamoed, and we said Kiddushin Noshim. Now, when it said Kiddushin Noshim, my love, Shtari Kiddushin Mamish, wasn't it talking about the actual document, like we said, to go and have the woman be Mekudush to you via this document? So Gemara says, no, lab dafka. You know what our Mishnah actually could have said for Kiddushei Noshim? It could have been talking about Shtarei Psikta. What are Shtarei Psikta? Uchad Rav Gidol Amar Rav. It's like what Gidol Amar Rav said. What did he say? Amar Gidol Amar Rav, Kamo Atenosin Levincha, Kach V'Kach, Kamo Atenosin Levitcha, Kach V'Kach. This is the financial arrangements from before the wedding that the father of the chassan and the father of the kala get together and they say, okay, I'll give $10,000, you give $10,000. They each agree what they're going to give to get the couple off to a good start, to allow them to, take care of their financial needs, right, when they're getting married, when they may not have much of an income coming in, and therefore, that's the shtar psikta that you're allowed to write. And therefore, amdu v'kotshu kanu, and when they get up and they agree that this is going to occur, so then hein nadvar v'nikub b'mira, so then these obligations take effect, even without a real kinyan. So therefore, they write them down, so therefore nobody can back out afterwards. And maybe that's what the Mishnah is talking about, this Kiddushei Noshim is talking about the Shtar Psikta and not the actual act of Kiddushin, so maybe it's not a Raya to Shmuel. Try again. Let us bring the following Raya to Shmuel from the following Mishnah. We had learned previously on Dav Ches and on Masechta, we had said, you're not allowed to get married, the full Nisuin on Chol Hamoed. Lo Besulos, not to a woman who's not been married previously. Lo Amonos, not to a woman who never her husband passed away. Lo Miyabin, likewise, don't do Yibum. Venesha Simcha, Hilo, because this is the tremendous Simcha to take this woman in and have relations with her and consummate the marriage. Implication being, however, Holy Aris, Shareba, to go and just do Erisin, the first stage of marriage, Kiddushin, that would be permissible. So Gemara says, Lomi boy Kamar, not necessarily is this a good proof. Why? Because it didn't tell me about Erisin that you're not allowed to do that because it was obvious. Lomi boy Loris, you didn't have to tell me that you're not allowed to do Erisin on Chol Hamoed because the low COVID mitzvah, you're not doing a mitzvah. So what would have been the Havim mean to think that you are allowed to do it? The other things, when you're doing a mitzvah, the actual consummation of the marriage is a part of the mitzvah of Puri Rivia. So Elo Afilu Lisa Nami, but nevertheless, even though you're doing a mitzvah, the COVID mitzvah, nevertheless, is also to do this on Chol Hamoed. So at this point, we still don't have a proof to Shmuel's statement that you're allowed to be ma'aris a woman on Chol Hamoed. But now the Gemara is going to give us the definitive proof. Toshma. The Gemara brings down the following brisa. The Tana Devi Shmuel, they learned in the base medrash of Shmuel. Ma'arisin, you're allowed to be ma'aris a woman to do erisin kiddushin with a woman. Erisin and kiddushin, interchangeable terms. Avalo konsin, but you're not allowed to have the second stage of marriage to actually bring her in and consummate the marriage. That's called nisuin. The ein osin sudas erisin. you're allowed to be ma'aris to a woman, but you can't have a suda with it on Chol HaMoed. That would be ma'ariv and simcha b'simcha. And likewise, lo miyabmin, and you can't do yibum, because of all of these things, the suda of erisin, albeit not the erisin, and certainly yibum and nisuin, they would all be b'nei simcha ilo. Those aren't allowed to be done because ain ma'ariv and simcha b'simcha. You're supposed to be samachta b'chagecha v'lo b'yishtecha, and therefore all of these would be against that principle. But just simple erisin without a suda is not such a great simcha, and it does prevent the woman from accepting kedushin from somebody else, so it accomplishes the purpose of making sure that nobody else beats you to the punch, and therefore, shema mina, this is a good raya to Shmuel. Now, the Gemara says, does really Shmuel hold like this? Umi yomar Shmuel shema yikad benu achar? Are we really concerned that somebody else is going to chop you and go ahead of you and marry this woman before you have the chance to marry her? After all, Shmuel himself was the one that said the following idea. Every single day, Basko Yotzeis, a voice rings out from Shemaim, Basko, and it says, Bas Ploni Liploni, Sode Ploni Liploni. The Basko calls that every day and says that the daughter of so-and-so is going to marry so-and-so. Now, everybody always questions, why didn't it say Plonis Laploni? And that's because usually the man is older than the woman, and this is said on the day that the man is either decided to be created by a Kodesh Baruch Hu, or on the actual day that the conception occurs, because it takes 40 days for the Vlad to be a Vlad Shel Kayama, so that's why it's 40 days beforehand at the time of conception. Others suggest, no, it's about 40 days even before the conception, but the simple understanding is from the time of conception, so a voice rings out that this man is going to marry a certain girl, but that girl isn't born yet, isn't even conceived yet, so therefore that's what uses the terminology of Bas Ploni, the daughter of so-and-so. The father is alive, usually, and therefore it says Bas Ploni, the daughter of so-and-so, even though she hasn't yet been born yet, will eventually marry this child that is being conceived right now. So that's why it says Bas Ploni Laploni. But the point over here that we're making is, how could Shmuel say somebody else is going to chop you, somebody else is going to jump ahead of you and marry this woman, Shema Yikad Menu Acher? It's preordained. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has declared that this woman is for you. So how could somebody else, so to say, jump ahead? And likewise, HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares, stay ploni laploni, that you're going to have this certain type of a financial situation. You'll have this property, you won't have this property, you'll have this possession, you won't have this possession. So how could somebody else take it from you? It's all, so to say, preordained. Now, that's the question on Shmuel. Tosa says, we asked this question and answered it elsewhere. After all, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, and in the first parak of Sota, the bottom Tosis tells us, Amai lo mishani, why don't we answer over here, Habazuk sheni, Habazuk rishon, that there's a difference between a first marriage, which is preordained, and a second marriage that is dependent upon your actions. If a person is worthy, he'll have a great second marriage. If he's nebuch, not so good, he won't have such a great second marriage. So why don't we just say over here, the difference is that Shema Yikabin Wacher is talking about the second marriage, and the first marriage, that's preordained. So Tosis doesn't answer why we don't give that answer over here, as Akasha. In any event, the Gemara does give a different answer, and that answer is as follows. It is not that somebody else will just hop ahead of you, Ela Shema Yikadmenu Acher Berachamim. Somebody's going to dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu and will change around what was preordained. Yes, Reuven was supposed to marry Sarah, but because Shimon davened so hard, he's going to change it around, and now Sarah's going to marry him. And we see a Maisa Shehoya, he heard the Rava. This was a Maisa that came in front of the Rava. Shame, he heard, Lao Gavra, the boy Rachme, he heard a certain person davening, and this person was davening, and he was saying, Omar, tis Damen Li Plonisa, please let such and such a woman marry me. He was davening and davening that this woman should marry him. So I'm late. So Rava said to him, Loiti boy Rachme, it's improper that you should daven in such a way, because Ichaz Yoloch, if she is destined to marry you, she will. And there's no way it will be taken away. Lo Oz Leminach, and she won't go away from you. But if she's not destined for you, then all of your davening over here will make no difference. V'lo kafar to Hashem. And if in fact you're begging Hashem to do something that goes against the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're basically being kofar. If you do this, you're actually doing a negative and not a positive. Now, this is not talking about normal davening, hishtadlus, you should daven for a good shidduch, you should daven so-and-so should like you. He's talking about something that's yotzei min haklal, something's abnormal over here. This woman is already going out with somebody, they're about to get engaged, mistama, and you're davening that it should this girl should be your shidduch. So in that situation, that's an improper davening. No, Rava gave this guy musr, but the guy didn't take the musr well. Basar hachi, not a long time after that, Shame, Rava still heard this person davening the Komar. He was so intent on marrying this woman, he says, Oh, ihu lemus mikamo. He says, either I should die if I don't marry her, so then let me die. Or, oh, if she doesn't want to marry me, tomus mikame, she should die before me.
In other words, that was a horrible thing that he was now saying. He said, if I can't marry you, then either she should die or I should die. And that's a terrible thing. And Amalei, Rabbi said to this person, La Vaminulach, didn't I tell you? Lo Tibayala. Don't go and ask for something like this. The Mil Sahachi, in this way that you did it, it's totally wrong. You're being a kofer by doing what you're doing. Again, this is not normal ishtadlus. This is not a normal tefillah. This is talking about something Yotzei min HaKlal. Now, we have a statement from Rav in the name of a Tana that we don't find very often in Shas. Amar Rav, Mishum Rabbi Reuven, Binitz Trubuli. And we're going to have a couple of statements that Rav made in his name. So Rav tells us in the name of this Tana, Rabbi Reuven, Binitz Trubuli, Min HaTorah, Uminan Vim, Uminak Suvim, Me Hashem, Isha Le'ish. We find reference to this from all aspects of Tanakh, from Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu destines who should marry who, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes shiduchim, he's a mezaveg, he is the one that pairs off a man with a woman. Where do we see this in Tanakh? So, min HaTorah, in Torah, in Chumash, the pasuk says, Vayal lovenu besuel, when Eliezer comes to go and find a shiduch for Yitzchak, so obviously he ends up meeting up with Rivka, and he goes to ask her hand in marriage from Lavan and besuel, Vayomru, and they say, Me Hashem Yotza Dover, they didn't really want Rivka to go, but they saw that it was from Shemayim, it was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they admitted so much themselves and said that this is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, you see clearly here that from Torah, from Chumash, it shows us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that's Mezavig Zivugim. Min HaNviim, where do we find this in Navi? The Siv, because the Pasuk tells us in regards to Shimshon, that Shimshon wanted to marry Delelia, and Ba'av Vimo Liyadu Kim Yashem Hi. They didn't know that this was from God, implying that Shiduchim like this is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mezadeh Zivugim. And where do you find this in Ksuvim? So this is a pasuk that we have in Mishlei. In Ksuvim, it says, Bayis Vahon Nachlas Ovos Umei Hashem Isha Maskales. That you can have a house or not have the house. You can have home, you can have lots of money. And you can have Nachlas Ovos, you can get a Yerusha. But Mei Hashem is Isha Maskeles. To get a wise wife, a sechel dika wife, so then that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we see here, Rav Reuven ben Yitzchak, as Rav pointed out, he said that both from Torah, Nevi'im, and Kesuvim, we find this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making Mei Hashem Isha Le'ish. Then he says another member of Amar Rav Mishum Rav Reuven ben Yitzchak, Rav says another member from this Tana, Rav Reuven ben Strubuli. Others say the Amilah b'Masnisa Tana. It was actually stated beferish in a brisa. Not that Rav said it, but it was a brisa. And it says in the brisa, Amar Rav Reuven ben Strubuli, ain't all the mechshad b'davar elo imkein aso. A person is not suspected of something unless he in fact did it. This would be the aphorism in English, where there's smoke, there's fire. Now we'll see that there's plenty of things to show that that's not wrong. Not Rachmona Litzlan. Every single person who's accused, as they may be accused falsely, of doing an Aveira, is in any way suspected that he did the Aveira. But, as we'll see, he's making a statement that when you have a persistent chashad, and it keeps on coming back, as we'll see in the Gemara, and it doesn't go away, and certainly if you have multiple people making such an accusation, so then, mistama, the person did what he is suspected of, accused of doing. The lo asa, Rav Reuven ben Yitzchak adds, and even if he didn't do it, kulo, he didn't do the entire thing that he's being accused of, asa mitzaso, he may have done part of it. So the man's accused of adultery, Rachmana Litzlan, but he may have not have done adultery, but he did something that was almost as bad. Or the lo asa mitzaso, or if he even didn't do the action itself, here I believe lasoso, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it that his personal thoughts, which were inappropriate, so he's accused of this Avera, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it's really appropriate that he's accused of this Avera because he wanted to do the Avera, he's thinking about doing the Avera even though he didn't do it. And furthermore, he says, V'imlo hira b'libo l'asoso, and even if the person never did the Avera, didn't do part of it, and didn't even think about doing the Avera, if he saw Roa Acherim Sh'asu, he saw other people do the Avera, V'sameach, he says, wow, wow, what a lucky guy. So then, in this situation as well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will sometimes make it that he'll be choshud, he'll be suspected of doing that Avera himself. That's what Rav Reuven ben Yitzchak said, and obviously, you probably have the same questions that the Gemara has. Moshe Rav Yaakov says, wait a second, we have a pasuk from Lachem Beis that tells us, Vayachpu v'nei Yisrael devarim asher lo chein al Hashem Elokeihem, that Klal Yisrael accused HaKadosh Baruch Hu kaviyachol of doing things that of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't do. So how can you say that when somebody is accused of something, they're automatically, where there's smoke, there's fire. There certainly is no fire by HaKadosh Baruch Hu in terms of being accused of doing anything unjust by Klal Yisrael. So the Gemara says, no. Hasam lahachisu the avod. There, these people that were saying bad things about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they knew it wasn't true. They were just doing it to be angering HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They did it lahachis. They did it to make HaKadosh Baruch Hu kaviyachol upset with them, but not because in any way it was true. Gemara is not happy yet to leave Rav Ruvein ben Strabuli's statement uncontested. Toshva, we bring a raya from the following brisa. It says, "Vayikanu leMoshe b'machane liAaron kedosh Hashem." That the people of Klal Yisrael were very jealous of Moshe and Aaron, and therefore they accused Moshe of Rachmona Litzlan committing adultery with their wives, and they were vayikanu. They did the acts of making a woman into a sota. They said, "If you are alone with Moshe, then you are going to be a sota." Then we're doing kinui and stira, and you'll have to go through the whole sota process. Now, why would they do this to Moshe Rabbeinu? Chas v'shalom, does anybody think that Moshe Rabbeinu had even thought of doing such an aveira, or was happy that somebody was doing such an aveira? So, how do we understand this? So, Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak Amar, he says, "Malamish kol echad kina l'ishto mimoshe." This pasuk is teaching us that they did, in fact, accuse their wives of closeting along with Moshe Rabbeinu, and they warned them not to do this in a formal sota. So how can you possibly say, though, that Moshe Rabbeinu really was in any way suspect? So the Gemara gives a similar teretz to what we said before about Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the answer is they hated Moshe Rabbeinu. Hasa mishum sina hu d'yavid. They did this out of hatred for Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, why should they hate Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest person that ever lived, the most humble person that ever lived. But so the Mefarshim tell us that when they asked their wives to go contribute for the Egel, the wives said no. When Moshe Rabbeinu asked the women, those same wives, to go contribute to the Mishkan, they all said yes. So they were upset that Moshe Rabbeinu held so much sway over their wives, and that this religion held so much sway over their wives, and they weren't doing what they wanted, but they did what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, so they took it out, so to say, on Moshe. They hated Moshe Rabbeinu for making their wives not follow what they said to do, but they followed what Moshe and the Torah said to do, so therefore, that was the sinner that they had for Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's why they accused him. In the same sin, a person sees his own sins. So they knew they wanted to do all sorts of various inappropriate things, and they wanted Moshe Rabbeinu, therefore, to be accused of those same inappropriate things. Still, we're not happy with Rav Ruvein ben Strabuli's statement, and Gemara tries again to knock it. Toshma, Amar Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi said, "Yehi chalki, it should be my portion in me shechoshten also bedover v'yembo. I should be so fortunate as to be accused of something which, of course, I did not do, because the pain and suffering that you get from this accusation is going to be a tremendous kapara for the person." And I personally will add over here that I had, unfortunately, many times this past 2 years been attacked, I would dare say extremely inappropriately, by various people who, even if you want to disagree with something that I would say, chas v'shalom, how somebody could say the horrible things that sometimes people said. And my rabbeim all told me universally they were jealous of the schar that I would get if you're attacked in this way and you don't respond inappropriately, which Baruch Hashem, I hope I did not respond inappropriately. So in this situation, the schar that you get is a tremendous schar. So that's really what Rav Yossi is telling us over here. You should be so fortunate that people are accusing you of something, and he says, of course you didn't do it. Now, according to Rav Ruvein ben Strabuli, if you're being accused of something, then you must have done it in some way, shape, or form. The other Rav Papa says, L'didi chajdun v'lo havabi. He says, I personally had this happened that what Rav Yossi said, that he was accused of something that, of course, he did not do, and he was zochet to this great reward that Rav Yossi promised. So therefore, how could we possibly say Rav Ruvein ben Strabuli is correct, and if you're accused of something, you must have done something wrong? Where there's smoke, there's fire. Clearly, Rav Yossi, Rav Papa, and many, many other people, they're accused of things falsely, and they didn't do anything wrong to beget that type of an accusation. So Gemara says, yes, of course, that's true. No kasha. How could it possibly be that the Rav Ruvein ben Strabuli says, where there's smoke, there's fire, and yet, clearly, where there's smoke, there's not always fire? So the Gemara answers, it depends. Ha b'kala de pasik, ha b'kala de lo pasik. It depends. When somebody's accused of something, does it go away? So-and-so is accused of Rachmana l'Islam being an adulterer. No, it has 15 minutes of fame, and then it goes away. Nobody thinks about it. Everybody knows that it was garbage. So then, that's the type of thing that Rav Yossi, Rav Papa say, Yehel Chalki, and Misha Choshen, also B'davra Ve'inba. It has no lasting power. It has no durability. So obviously, it was a false accusation. And therefore, that's a great thing for that person that he was so falsely accused. It's a tremendous kapara for him. But if it doesn't go away, Rachmana l'Islam, this person did those aveiros, and they keep on having accuser after accuser come, and it's constantly new evidence, and it's constantly percolating and getting new press releases and new public discussion about it. So then, mistama, where there's smoke, there's fire. New, what is the definition of durability? Gemara says, call it lo posik. When something doesn't go away, the rumor just doesn't go away. Ad kama, how do we define it doesn't go away? So Amar Abaye says, Amliye, my mother taught me, again, we mentioned many, many times, Abaye's father Nebuch died shortly after the conception, and his mother died during childbirth, so he was raised by this aim, this mother, who he calls his mother, and Abaye said that she taught him, Dumi Damasa, that if it's silent in the town after Yom or Palga, so then it's not considered significant. But if it's still going on after a day and a half, so then that's called durability. That's called a kola delo posik. Where it says, Bahani mili delo posik beni beni. And this is talking about where it didn't stop in between. Abo posik beni beni less above. But if it did stop, so then we're not concerned even if it came up a little bit later on. But the chiposik beni beni, but if it did stop, lo amarin, ella delo posik machmasir. If it stopped because the guy is a tough guy and he sent out messages and says, if you keep on with these accusations, you're going to be sorry. So then that's not called that it doesn't stop. If it stops because he's a strong-armed guy, he's a bully, and all of a sudden you're terrified for your life, and that's why you stop making the accusations, so then that's not called a kola de lo posik bay. And furthermore, below Amarun, we don't say that it's called stopping, ella de lo hodor nova, if it doesn't come back up again with a vengeance. So it stopped for a while, so that's called the posik, but then if it keeps on coming back a few days later, avahodor nova, if it comes back and goes and bites again, if it comes back and really starts up all over again, so then, lo, that's not included in kola de posak bay. And finally, the last item that the Gemara says, below Amarun, we only said this, ella de lesle oivim. These accusations that we say where there's smoke, there's fire, is that there's no personal animosity, there's no personal enmity between the one making the accusations and the one who's receiving them. But if there's a history of Nebuch, these two don't get along, or there's a history that the person making the accusations is a horrible person, makes accusations against everybody. So in that situation, if there's hatred over there, so then you don't believe something that somebody who hates you goes and says against you. The only reason he's making these accusations is because he hates you. He's your enemy. Just like with Moshe Rabbeinu. You have to say sinner. There was hatred involved over there. This poor person is being accused. He didn't do anything wrong. But the other people hate him for whatever the reason. And therefore, they make up things about him. And therefore, in that situation, that is not where this application of the rule that the cold doesn't stop, if there's a hatred there and these people are looking just to ruin a person's reputation or ruin a person, so then that is not called a kola delo posik. That is called hatred. And with hatred, you can't say, even Reuven ben Estrobali would not say that where there's smoke, there's fire. It's a very complicated sugya. It shouldn't be just learned simply to say practical ramifications, halacha l'maisa. In every one of these cases, especially if it involves Rahman al-Islam, serious accusations, needs to be invested by a competent based in with the police and secular authorities as necessary. There's no inyan of masira if other people's involvement is putting them at risk, especially when you have abuse situations. And it must be clarified and stated that Rav Shechter Shlita and many other Gedolei Yisrael have said under these circumstances, absolutely there's an obligation to go to the appropriate authorities who can investigate and either clear the person, if that's the situation, or Rahman al-Islam, if it's in fact he did something incorrect, to make sure that such rishus and such incorrect things are not ever done again to somebody else, and that the person is held accountable for the heaven forbid terrible things that he did. Difficult note to conclude the shiur, but with this we conclude today's shiur.